Welcome, add my welcome to Riches. If you're visiting this morning, particular welcome. My name's Simon, I'm the vicar here. It's great to see you. You are very welcome. We hope you'll stay afterwards for some coffee so we can get to know you a bit more as well. My sermon really has gone. Right, okay. I do sometimes wonder when something like this happens, exactly what is going on. And it's interesting because, you know, our battle is not against flesh and blood, and we can't always see technological attacks as being of the devil. But at the same time, we do believe we serve a God who is present, and that God who is present wants us to know him more, wants us to love him more, wants to discover more about his love for us, and wants us to experience that love. And that actually the more we seek to press into that, the more there is an enemy who doesn't want us to know that, who doesn't want us to know our true identity, doesn't want us to know that we are children of God, much loved by God. And I just sensed this morning that in what I'm going to be sharing, and it has come back, so that's good, from Daniel, that for some of you, this is really key this morning, and particularly something about your heart this morning, because I'm going to be talking a bit about a softness of heart. And I believe that for some of us this morning, life's got a bit tough, and as a result, our hearts have become a bit hardened. We've become hardened, even to the love of God. You know, if you don't hear anything else this morning, hear that God knows you, that he loves you, and he wants the wonders of his love to be experienced in your life so that you can live life in all its fullness and know all that he has for you. We're going to continue to look at the book of Daniel. I'd got a new regime. Sermon finished nearly by the end of Monday. Normally it's by the end of Saturday night, sometimes Sunday morning. End of Monday. PowerPoint finished by Friday. It was done. PowerPoint sent off. Beautiful pictures, the works. Yeah, forget that. You're not having a PowerPoint again. But it also had all the text that we were going to be looking at as we go through Daniel. And I'm afraid now we don't have the text. So if you grab a Bible from the seat in front of you, because you probably will want to follow this as I go through it, or if you've got an app that's the Bible app on your phone, pull that up so that you've got access to Daniel 5. And as I was preparing for this sermon, the title I thought it would be Reading the Signs of the Times. Reading the Signs of the Times. But actually, as I started to prepare the sermon and as I read through the passage and as I was praying, what did was the thing that God really wanted us to know and do this morning. It was honouring God in all things. Honouring God in all things. And we're going to look at the importance of honouring God with the whole of our lives, all through the story of someone who didn't. And who is told directly in verse 23 of chapter 5, at the end of verse 23, but you did not honour the God who holds in his hand your life and all your ways. And so we're going to look at someone who didn't honour God, and we're going to try and learn from him about how do we, some things, there's lots of ways we can honour God, but some things we can learn from his life as we seek to honour God with all of our lives and in all of our ways. And just to give you some context, if you've not been journeying with us over the last few weeks and haven't been studying Daniel with us, we've been looking at the book of Daniel. And the first four chapters of Daniel have really all been about King Nebuchadnezzar. And King Nebuchadnezzar, he was a narcissist. He was a very powerful king. He would kill people who didn't do things the way he wanted them done. And there's been a series of stories whereby Daniel and his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego have stood up against King Nebuchadnezzar. And they've stood up in danger of death. They've stood up and they've remained faithful to God. And we've seen that Nebuchadnezzar, in those four chapters, had a really roller coaster relationship with God himself. Sort of starting off, you know, believing his gods were stronger than God, discovering the God of Daniel. Saying that this God was amazing and then seeming to forget about it and becoming very proud, was humbled, ended up, as we were looking at last week, ended up for 7 years in a sort of wilderness experience and was then restored. And in all of this, as I say, Daniel and his three friends have been courageous. They've demonstrated faith. And at the end of Daniel 4, the previous chapter, end of Daniel 4, verse 37, Nebuchadnezzar has reached this place where he says, "Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and exalt and glorify the King of heaven, because everything he does is right, and all his ways are just. And those who walk in pride, he is able to humble." And so by the end, Nebuchadnezzar has got it. End of chapter 4, he's got it. He's praising and exalting and glorifying the King of heaven. And then in chapter 5, we meet his son. We don't know then quite when what happened with the changeover, but now, and we don't know how long his son has now been king, but now we have King Belshazzar. And King Belshazzar has not learnt anything from his father. They say the apple falls close to the tree, I think is a phrase, meaning, children can take on it can be like their parents. And Belshazzar is very like Nebuchadnezzar, worse in many ways. And so we meet Belshazzar at a banquet, and he's having this banquet for 1,000 of his nobles, drinking wine with them, it's a wild party. This is not a Whitney dinner party. This is a wild party. The concubines are there. And halfway through this, he's probably already drunk. He decides he's going to get the gold and silver goblets from the temple in Jerusalem. And you remember back in Daniel 1, Daniel and his friends have been taken into Babylon from Jerusalem. They're in a foreign country. They were taken captive. And when Jerusalem was taken, the temple was sacked and destroyed, and the goblets and the things from the temple were taken into Babylon as well. And so Belshazzar says, go and get the goblets from the temple so that the king and his nobles, his wives and his concubines might drink from them. So they brought in the gold goblets that had been taken from the temple of God in Jerusalem. King, the noble, his wives and his concubines drank from them. And as they drank the wine, they praised the gods of gold and silver, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone. They're getting these goblets that have come from the temple of Jerusalem, from God's temple, and they're now praising stone and wood and iron with God's goblets. This is like Nietzsche. Nietzsche, who said, the philosopher who said, God is dead. God is dead. This is what they're saying. Your God's dead. We're more powerful than you. God is dead. I love the graffiti which said, God is dead, signed Nietzsche. Nietzsche is very dead, signed God. And that's sort of what happens next, really, because all of a sudden, this fingers of a human hand appeared, verse 5. They wrote on the plaster of the wall near the lampstand in the royal palace. The king watched the hand as it wrote. There's this sort of disembodied hand appears and starts writing on the wall of the palace. The king watched the hand as it wrote. His face turned pale. He was so frightened that his legs became weak and his knees were knocking. God has got Belshazzar's attention. And my first question this morning is, what does God need to do to get your attention? What does God need to do to get your attention? Belshazzar is a supremely arrogant guy. He was all powerful among his peers. If anyone disagreed with him, he'd just have them killed. He wasn't going to listen to anyone else. He wasn't going to take counsel or advice from anyone else. He was horrible. And God had to do something pretty dramatic to get his attention. God had to do something that even Belshazzar couldn't disagree with. And so he does. He writes on the wall. Now, I know there is no one here like Belshazzar. But the truth is, there's times in all of our lives where we take God for granted. Where we don't honour him with the whole of our lives and in all of our ways. Where we maybe try and live life without him and then go back to him when things get difficult. Or where we maybe even start to wonder where he is and we just get confused by what's going on in the world, and so we just put God to one side, or we keep him in a place where, you can be God of that bit of my life. You can be God over there, but not the whole of my life, not all of my ways, not my money. No, you can be God of this, but not of everything. And I sometimes meet people, I often meet people, but I sometimes meet people where they're at a personal tragedy, a crisis. And at that moment of tragedy or crisis, that's the time that they start to look to God. That's the time that they start to want to find out if there's someone who can help them. But it doesn't have to be like that. It doesn't have to be a tragedy that gets our attention. It doesn't have to be a crisis at work that gets our attention. It doesn't have to be something going on bad with our children that gets our attention. You know, God wants to get our attention every day. He wants to meet with us every day. He wants to speak to us every day. And you know that the easiest way to hear from God every day is to pray every day and read your Bible every day. That's the easiest way to make sure you're hearing from God. The Bishop of London, who's just retired, said, the one job you can't delegate is personal prayer and Bible study. Is personal prayer and Bible study. You know, if you're not hearing God, then what are you doing to hear God? Because he wants to speak to you through his word. And if you're then listening to him regularly and walking with him closely, then actually he doesn't need to do something dramatic to get your attention because he's already got your attention. But Belshazzar needed something dramatic. And so in verse 7, you know, Belshazzar, his attention is now heightened. He summons the enchanters, the astrologers, the diviners. He says to the wise men, whoever reads this writing tells me what it means. They'll be clothed in purple, they'll get a gold chain around their neck, and they'll be the third highest appointment in the kingdom. And when all the king's men came, they couldn't read the writing or tell the king what it meant. In verse 9, so King Belshazzar became even more terrified. His face grew more pale. His nobles were baffled. Fortunately for Belshazzar, Mum arrives. It's always nice when you've turned pale and your knees are knocking when your mum turns up. And she does. The queen, hearing the voices of the king and the nobles, came into the banquet hall. May the king live forever, she said. Don't be alarmed. Don't look so pale. There is a man in your kingdom who has the spirit of the holy gods in him. In the time of your father, he was found to have insight and intelligence and wisdom like that of the gods. Your father, the king Nebuchadnezzar, appointed him chief of the magicians, enchanters, astrologers, and diviners. He did this because Daniel, whom the king called Belteshazzar, was found to have a keen mind and knowledge and understanding and the ability to interpret dreams, explain riddles, and solve difficult problems. Call for Daniel, and he will tell you what the writing means. So Daniel was brought before the king, and the king said to him, are you Daniel, one of the exiles my father the king brought from Judah? I have heard that the spirit of the God is in you, and that you have insight, intelligence, and outstanding wisdom. If you want to live your life honoring God in all your ways, keep close to wisdom. Keep close to wisdom. You see, Belshazzar had this incredibly wise guy in his kingdom. Someone who walked really closely with God. Who God spoke to, who he could understand what God said. Incredible wisdom. And Belshazzar, who had presumably grown up as Nebuchadnezzar had experienced this guy's interpretation of dreams and everything that had gone on and the stories about him, he had no knowledge of him. He'd forgotten about him. He'd forgotten that he'd existed. He's got this font of wisdom right there for him, and he's paying it no attention. And my first point is simply this: keep close to wisdom. Keep close to wisdom. I love the fact that there are some very wise people in our church community who I can go and talk to about different things at different times. I love when I see someone. So year before last, November 2015, I had the opportunity to go out to Willow Creek in America, and I heard Gordon MacDonald speak. And some of you will remember me talking about this. Gordon MacDonald is in his 80s. He's written a number of books. He was a church leader of a number of large churches in the States. I then heard he was coming over to do a seminar over here. And I thought, great, I'm going to go to the seminar. I really enjoyed what I heard from him there. I want more of the same. He was a wise man. I wanted more of his wisdom. Then I was speaking to the guy who's going to be sort of his driver for the time he was in the UK. And he said, oh, yeah, he's flying into Heathrow. And then I think I'm probably going to take him to Oxford. I said, don't go to Oxford. Don't go to Oxford. Come to Cogs. I said, bring him to Cogs. Bring him to Cogs. We've got an old church. I can show him old churches if that's what he wants. I'll take him to Cotswold Pub for lunch. Because he's wise, and I wanted to be close to wisdom. And I wanted an opportunity to just hang out with Gordon MacDonald. And I said, we're next to a farm where they filmed Downton Abbey. Find out if he likes Downton Abbey, because we're next to a farm where they filmed Downton Abbey. He liked Downton Abbey. So Gordon MacDonald came. I had a day with Gordon MacDonald. I took him to Bampton. This is the church where they got... Right, Tom. This is the church where they filmed Downton Abbey. And I did all of this. But, you know, we had this lunch. And he was asking me questions. And I just knew this was a wise man. And I just wanted to, I sort of wanted to suck him dry. I want your wisdom. I've since read three of his books. You know, and that's another way you can keep close to wisdom. Seek good counsel. You know, seek good counsel. I meet so many people who sort of, you just think, why didn't you get some advice? Why did you sort of crash through life and not seek good counsel? There are people here, we've got this great thing alongside us, who can come alongside people at different times in life and help work through stuff. And I think it's maybe sometimes a British thing, or we've got to sort it out ourselves, or we don't, you know, we won't admit, we just don't know, and we're stuck, and we need some help. Seek good counsel. The other thing that I've had for a number of years is I've had a spiritual director. And I would see him regularly, and then he moved to Barcelona. I don't think it was personal. So I haven't for a while had a spiritual director. And the team, actually, we were having a discussion the other day, and we were talking about discipleship, and they said, well, who do you see? And I do see people from here and others who I meet with and talk about things. But I thought, actually, at the moment, I'm not seeing a spiritual director regularly, and I need that. And so this last week, I've asked someone if they'll be my spiritual director, not from here, from further away, who I can go and talk to. And I want to seek counsel and wisdom because I want to grow and I want to keep close to wisdom because I want to honour God with all of my life and in all of my ways. And to do that, I need others to help me. Belshazzar had wisdom right there, and he didn't take advantage of it. You know, we've got, again, people here with lots of wisdom. If you need help with someone, ask. Encourage positive peer pressure. Yeah, and personally, I'm delighted if someone rings up and asks for some help. Usually, I'm really delighted if they ask for help before it's reached absolute crisis, where sometimes I just think, why didn't you call 6 months ago? Yeah, and if I can't help them, I'll seek where someone can within our community. Don't forget the good people in your life, the people who are wise. You know, one of my prayers for my sons is that they will have wise friends. They will have wise friends for positive peer pressure. And I do try to surround myself with wise people. I look at, you know, I think we've got a pretty wise team at the moment. And this is going to sound a bit weird. There were many things that first attracted me to Sue. Many things. But one of them was her wisdom. One of them was her wisdom. She is a wise woman. I wanted to spend my life with someone who would sharpen me, who would make me wiser, who would challenge me, who would bring the best out of me. And I wanted to do that for them as well. You know, look for wisdom. Seek wisdom. I read this week as I was preparing. It's a bit pop psychology, but I think they've got something in it. The people we surround ourselves with either raise or lower our standards. They either help us to become the best version of ourselves or encourage us to become lesser versions of ourselves. We become like our friends. No man becomes great on his own. No woman becomes great on her own. The people around them help to make them great. We all need people in our lives who raise our standards, remind us of our essential purpose, and challenge us to become the best version of ourselves. We need that, and we can do that. That's why I believe faith is about in community. It's not about in isolation. Surround yourself with people who bring the best out of you. Another way, you know, I've said before, one of my favorite verses, Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. Who is sharpening you at the moment? Belshazzar had surrounded himself with people who weren't sharpening him. He's had access throughout his life to someone with outstanding wisdom, and yet he'd forgotten he existed. And here's the thing, folks, you don't necessarily get wiser with age. You get wiser by taking the counsel of wise people. You get wiser by fearing the Lord and honouring him. You know, the Bible says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. You get wiser by honouring God. So if you want to honour God with all your life, keep close to wisdom. Hang around people who honour God. And then in verse 15 and 16, Belshazzar goes on and says, look, solve this for me, and if you do, I'll give you a gold chain. I'll make you third highest in the kingdom. And Daniel, in verse 17, I almost sense a thing of, oh, here we go again. Been through all of this with Nebuchadnezzar, now it's his son. And it's like, you may keep your gifts for yourself and give your rewards to someone else. Nevertheless, I will read the writing for the king and tell him what it means. And then he goes into verse 18 through to 21. He reminds him of his father. He tells him about Nebuchadnezzar. Your majesty, the most high God, gave your father Nebuchadnezzar sovereignty and greatness and glory and splendor because of the high position he gave him. Those the king wanted to put to death, he put to death. Those he wanted to spare, he spared. People that wanted to promote, he promoted. La, la, la. But then in verse 20, but when his heart became arrogant and hardened with pride, he was deposed from his royal throne and stripped of his glory. He was driven away from the people and he lived with the wild animals. If you want to honour God in all your ways, with all of your life, watch your heart. Watch your heart. What happened to Nebuchadnezzar? His heart became arrogant and hardened with pride. Watch your heart. Watch your heart. What hardens a heart? Pride. Pride hardens a heart. Arrogance. But other things harden hearts. Unforgiveness hardens hearts. Disappointment hardens hearts. Sin hardens hearts. Hurt hardens hearts. Greed hardens hearts. And the truth is that all of us can find our heart hardening. You know, they talk about compassion fatigue, where you see so much on the telly that it no longer has an impact. Your heart becomes a bit hardened to it all. You no longer look at a refugee and think, feel compassion. Yeah. We sing, one of the songs we sing is, break my heart, Lord, with the things that break yours. And I believe, actually, you know, in the hardness of heart, we miss what God has for us. Yeah, cynicism comes through more than faith. We become hopeless rather than hopeful because our heart has hardened. And folks, this morning, I believe for some of us, God wants to just soften our hearts again. Just remind us again of his love and remind us of what he wants to do in our lives and through us in our world. These soft-hearted people aren't afraid of tears. They pray that God would make them more compassionate. They forgive easily. They look for the best in others. They seek to encourage and to raise up. They love the people around them. They keep their hearts soft. And when they feel their hearts hardening, they do something about it so that it softens again. I want to remain soft-hearted. I think God uses soft-heartedness, and I want to remain soft-hearted. I find myself, I don't know, there's a danger where you pray for soft-heartedness because you can find yourself weeping more. And I'm not going to be weeping every Sunday. It's not like me. But occasionally, you know, I just find, worst times are actually at family events. I seem to get incredibly soppy. But you know, I want to keep a soft heart. I want to keep compassionate. I want, actually, when I see things on the telly, I want to weep more. I'm so glad I went to Beirut because actually seeing the refugees out in that their home in Beirut helps keep my heart soft, stops it becoming just a bit hardened or a bit dull. So if you want to honour God with all of your life in all of your ways, keep your heart soft. Keep your heart soft. And then Daniel goes on and says, "But you, Belshazzar, his son, you've not humbled yourself, though you knew all of this. Instead, you've set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. You had the goblets from his temple brought to you. Your nobles and your wives drank wine from them. You praised the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, of iron and wood and stone, which cannot see or hear or understand. But you did not honor the God who holds in his hand your life and all your ways. Therefore, he sent the hand that wrote the inscription." The third, final thing, if you want to honor God in all your life and all your ways, there's other things as well, but today the third thing that I learned from Belshazzar as I read this is learn from the past. Learn from the past. You know, he just goes through, this was your father, Nebuchadnezzar. This is what he did. This is what happened in his life. And you knew all of this. He says in that verse 22, you knew all this. You knew it, and yet you still have chosen this way and this way of life. You've still chosen to ignore God. You've still chosen to honor stone and tin and wood. But you knew all of this. Learn from the past. You see, we learn from our mistakes. We learn the most from our mistakes. I certainly learn the most from my mistakes. The thing is to try not to keep making those mistakes, you know, and actually learn from them. And we learn from others' mistakes. He could have learned from his father's mistakes. He didn't have to repeat them. But he didn't. He didn't learn from those mistakes. You know, there's times in life where silly things I've learned that I think, gosh, I really learned that. The first wedding I took. Bit nervous. Bit of a tricky family. And they come to the front and I'm standing there, and I've got my service sheet, and I realise I've forgotten to get service sheets for the bride and groom and best man. We're all there at the front, and so I've got my. So I give them my service sheet. They told me they were going to sing. It's quite a small wedding. They said they were going to sing. I'm then singing All Things Bright and Beautiful solo, upside down, trying to read the words on their order of service. We get to the moment of the rings, and I say to the best man, he brings me, gives them the rings. I said, "Get some order of service sheets." And he comes and he's put the rings on my book. He gives me the order of service sheets. I let go of the book. The rings go. Shing. I become Catholic. Grab the rings. I learn. I've once dropped the ring since. But, you know, you learn from your mistakes. There's a silly one. But I've also learned there's times in life, you know, when I lead. And I did an expedition, the 15 Peaks in Wales. In 24 hours, you do 52 kilometres and you do the 15 peaks. It's a tough physical challenge. And I took a team and I realised pretty quick that I was fitter than my team. And that really frustrated me because I was just striding on and leaving the team behind. And John and anyone who's worked on mountains and things will tell you, you really do need to stay together as a team. But I was getting to the next thing and waiting. I was getting a bit cold as I was waiting and actually, that taught me something about leading and leadership and trying to take your team with you. Now, I have to say, that's something I've learned again while I've been vicar here. You know, I've got sometimes, you know, those of you who know me well, I want to be taking the next mountain. The next mountain. And I know that some of you felt, but hang on, we're back here. Next mountain, come on, let's go. And actually, you know, as a leader, I've got to take the team. And so learning, you know, anyone on the PCC knows, there's going to be another next mountain moment, but you've just got to go, Simon, team. We learn from our mistakes. We learn. We learn from the past. We learn from others' mistakes every time a leader fails and falls morally. And sadly, it happens because we're all flawed. You know, we all make mistakes, but every time one falls, I learn from it. I look at it and think, Lord, show me what I need to do in my life to make sure I don't go down that path. Learn. We learn. And then in verse 27, oh yeah, one more thing. Rafiki, great theologian, philosopher Rafiki. You heard of him? The Lion King. He's the monkey. He hits Simba the lion with his stick and he goes to hit him again and Simba ducks. And he says to him, the past can hurt, but the way I see it, you can either run from it or learn from it. can either run from it or learn from it. We learn. We need to learn from others' mistakes. We need to learn from our mistakes so we don't keep making the same ones. And then we get in verse 27. Daniel translates the passage of what's been written on the wall. And he says to Belshazzar, "You have been weighed on the scale and found wanting. You have been weighed on the scale and found wanting." I mean, that's a horrible thing for anyone to ever hear. And the good news is we will never hear that. God will never say that to us. As we keep looking to him, as we keep coming to him and saying we're sorry, he loves us. He loves us in an extraordinary way. He doesn't look at us and say, you have been weighed on the scale and found wanting. But Belshazzar, the bad news was the writing was on the wall. It was irredeemable. It was too late for recovery. And while he did give Daniel the gold, the chain, proclaimed in the third highest in the ruler, he himself was slain that night. It was too late. He couldn't change. Nothing could change. The writing was there, and God was just telling him what was going to happen. The good news for us is it's not too late. It's not too late. Whatever has gone on in our lives, it's not too late. We can have a fresh start today. We can have a new softness of heart today. We can have new hope today. If we've been neglectful in honouring God in all of our lives, in all of our ways, we just have to say, sorry, God. I'm probably going to be neglectful again. But right now, today, I want to be honouring you in every way that I can with all of my life. I want to put you first in everything right now, this Sunday. Sunday, 5th of February, 2017, I want to be doing this. And again, the whole thing, you know, I said we make mistakes and we come back. But today, I want to say, I want to honour you in all of my life, in all of my ways. Because he holds our life in his hands and all of our ways. So, first thing, stop and listen. Stop and listen. What does God need to do to get your attention? Well, put things into your life so that he's got your attention all the time, so that you're listening and hearing from him regularly. And then the three things we can learn from Belshazzar: seek wisdom. Some of you today need to seek wisdom. You need to actively seek it. You know, you need to talk to someone afterwards, or talk to someone outside of here, or find out about alongsiders, or, you know, email the office and say, you know, or email me. You know, some of us need to seek wisdom because we've not got enough of it in our lives. We need to be looking at who is raising us up, who are we praying with regularly, who's challenging us and encouraging us and helping us to be the best we can be. Seek wisdom. Watch your heart. Have you let your heart get hard? Have you allowed it to just calcify a bit? Do you need God, by his Spirit, to just set you free again this morning? Soften your heart. When did you last weep for the lost in our world? Learn from the past. Don't keep making the same mistakes. Don't run from the past. Learn from it. Learn from it. And come again before God and say, look, this is a mistake. And actually, you know, and I wasn't going to share this, but, you know, maybe there's some folk here this morning and you're struggling with some addictions. And it's like you keep making the same mistake. And that could be around eating. It could be around alcohol. It could be around pornography. Guys, it's not going to just stop. You're going to have to do something. You're going to have to learn from it. You're going to have to say, I want this to stop. And then imagine. Imagine what our church could look like. And any church could look like. What any community would look like. If the people in there are truly honouring God with all of their lives, in all of their ways. Soft-hearted. Listening for God. Seeking wisdom. Learning from the past. Imagine what that could be like.